It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Violating the conditions of bail is known as bail jumping. It's becoming a lot more common in Wisconsin. From 2011 to 2018, the number of bail jumping cases in court in Wisconsin more than doubled. Defendants who jump bail intentionally fail to comply with the terms of their bond. And Representative David Crowley, a Democrat from Milwaukee, had sought to pass legislation to clamp down on what he calls the overuse of bail jumping to force plea deals. And he talked with my colleague Rob Barrett on Central Time earlier this week.
Not enough people throughout the state and many of my colleagues really understand what bail jumping is. Again, when people look at bail jumping, they look at it as, well, somebody who just didn't show up to court. But there are many conditions that a judge can set when it comes down to bail, and those conditions can be limitless.
Do you know someone who was charged with bail jumping? Was it for a misdemeanor or felony offense? How did it affect their underlying case? We're at 800-642-1234. Cecilia Klingel is an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Cecilia, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So as Representative Crowley said there, bail jumping isn't just about when someone doesn't show up in court when they're supposed to. When can the defendant be charged with bail jumping here in Wisconsin?
In Wisconsin, you certainly can be charged with bail jumping for not appearing in court when you're told to do so. But in addition, you can be charged with a count of bail jumping every time you violate any condition of your bond. And that could range from missing a curfew to missing a drug test to having contact with someone you've been told not to contact while you are pretrial.
It can also mean not drinking. There can be conditions about the number of beers you could have, for instance.
Absolutely. And typically, a no alcohol condition is fairly common, even for individuals who aren't charged with an offense that had anything to do with alcohol consumption.
So what factors might a judge take into consideration when determining the conditions for someone's bond?
In general, bond conditions should be fairly limited because a person who hasn't been convicted of a crime is presumed innocent in our legal system. That said, a lot of folks in the courts are nervous about releasing individuals to the community who are charged with crimes without putting some conditions around them that they think will ensure community safety, and certainly that they don't engage in the same kind of criminal behavior. As a result, judges have a lot of leeway legally to place as many conditions as they think are appropriate on an individual. And sometimes the conditions can really add up quickly.
And certainly even the cost of the bail could also be set very high.
Right. So when we think about releasing people to the community before they've been found guilty of a crime, there are two ways that can happen. One is that we simply release them. They sign their name and say, I agree to show up to court when I'm supposed to. We usually call that a signature bond. And they go out into the community, and they may do that without any conditions or with some. The other way that someone can be released is with cash bail. And in that case, what we say is you have to pay some money up front so that you have some skin in the game to make sure you show up to court. And then at the end of the court case, that money will be returned to you minus any fines and fees that you might owe if you're found guilty.
What factors determine whether someone receives a misdemeanor charge or a felony charge for bail jumping?
So Wisconsin has sort of an unusual process for deciding whether a violating condition of your bond is charged as a misdemeanor, which would mean the maximum penalty that you face is 9 months in jail, or as a Class H felony, which in Wisconsin would mean that you face up to 6 years of total incarceration and supervision as a result. Rather than tying it to the seriousness of what you allegedly did, we tie it to what you are on bond for. So in other words, if you are charged with felony theft, any violation of any condition of your bond would be a new felony offense. And if you're on bond for misdemeanor battery, any violation of your bond would be a new misdemeanor offense.
And so this could escalate the situation quite quickly in terms of what you're faced with if you can have multiple charges for bail jumping.
Absolutely. So someone who is on bond for a nonviolent lower-level felony offense, for example, maybe has been told not to drink and to avoid a certain bar in town and not to have contact with the individual that reported the crime. And then if he or she goes out on if he goes out on his birthday and has a beer with his friends at the bar he's not supposed to be at and happens to see the person who reported the earlier crime, that would be at least three new felonies and possibly more, in addition to the underlying charge. And it's easy to see then why it is that when bail jumping charges add up very quickly, people tend, in general, to plead guilty to the underlying offense, with a district attorney often agreeing to dismiss one or more of those bail jumping charges in exchange for the guilty plea.
Oh, that's where you're seeing lawmakers say, hey, this is forcing plea deals?
That's right. It gives prosecutors a lot of leverage in plea negotiations because bail jumping charges usually are pretty easy to prove, right? They came to someone's attention in the first place. That evidence usually establishes that, in fact, there has been a violation of bond. And the penalties are just very, very high, often for behavior that may seem fairly minor. Now, it's also important to notice, though, that bail jumping can be quite serious. If you have a restraining order against you for domestic violence, and then you go and seek out your girlfriend, who is the victim of that domestic violence, most people would consider that a pretty significant infraction. So the ability to bring bail jumping charges isn't simply used frivolously. It can be used for good reasons, too.
We're talking with Cecilia Klingel. She's an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, where she teaches courses in criminal law. We're looking at bail jumping in Wisconsin. What do you want to know about what it means to jump bail? Do you know someone who has been charged with jumping bail? How did that affect their underlying case? Your questions, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Cecilia, how are Wisconsin's approach to bail jumping charges, does that contrast to other states?
So in many states, bail jumping as a criminal charge is reserved for cases in which someone on bond fails to show up in court. The whole idea behind bail historically has been that whether you're paying money or agreeing to follow rules, we're doing that to make sure you show up to your court cases. Because after all, as I said at the beginning, the presumption of innocence attaches to anyone who hasn't been convicted of a crime. And so the legal system doesn't actually have a lot of power to make you follow rules and do things against your will until you've been convicted. And as a result, the focus of bail jumping usually is that failure to show up for your court case so we can decide whether or not you're guilty. In Wisconsin, because we allow it for any violation of any condition of bond, and because we allow an indefinite number of charges in any one case, depending on how many conditions someone's alleged to have violated, we end up in a situation where bail jumping is one of our most charged crimes in the state. It's also one of our most dismissed crimes in the state, which, again, I think points to the fact that very frequently bail jumping charges will be dismissed when someone pleads guilty to the underlying crime.
Yeah. How often do you see bail jumping charges dismissed, and why are they dismissed?
There are lots of reasons why it might be dismissed. And in some cases, of course, you can imagine that there was bad information and someone didn't really violate. In other cases, there may be a decision that it's not necessary, that is disproportionate, the punishment to what actually happened. But in many cases, we see those charges being dismissed at the same time that someone is pleading guilty to another crime, maybe including one or more counts of bail jumping, but usually to something substantive. Importantly, though, it's also the case in Wisconsin that you can be convicted of bail jumping even if you're acquitted of the underlying crime or those original charges are dismissed.
And so even if your penalties and those underlying charges are dropped or you're innocent of them, you could still have these lingering charges of bail jumping that have to play out in court.
That's right, because the violation of the rules of your release is seen as an independent crime from whether or not you actually committed the crime you were originally charged with and were on bail for.
Can you point to specific cases at all where you saw bail jumping charges used as leverage to reach a plea deal?
So I mostly hear about this from state public defenders or from even prosecutors who talk about the way that bail jumping is used. I, of course, am hiding in the ivory tower talking to folks on the ground, but not seeing these cases in court day to day. There have been some really good studies published, however, in the last year or two. There was a law review article several years back that did a deep dive into the data and also talked about some real cases from Wisconsin that really examined our state's specific practices. And then more recently last year, there were several reports, I believe, put out by different think tanks around the state exploring this issue in greater depth.
Talking with UW Law School professor Cecilia Klingel. She's our guide to bail jumping when a defendant violates a condition a judge places on them when they are released before trial. What do you think about bail jumping? Should the severity of the charge be dependent on the underlying case? How do you feel about putting limits on how many bail jumping charges a defendant can get? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment, more conversation with Cecilia Klingel right here on the Ideas Network. Morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about bail jumping in Wisconsin's criminal justice system that is violating the conditions of bond. It's one of the most commonly charged crimes in our state, becoming more common. What questions do you have about the criminal justice proceedings for someone out on bail? What do you want to know about bail jumping? Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. UW Law School's Cecilia Klingel teaches courses in constitutional criminal procedure, sentencing, and corrections, and she stays with us. Let's take a call now. Ben is joining us from West Salem. Hi, Ben.
Hi. I've just been listening, and it seems like there's a lot of concern, maybe perhaps I'm wrong, but on the additional charges that are being added on from bail jumping. And I'd just like to point, in my personal experience, a man was stalking a friend of mine, did some pretty terrible things. And then due to his constant interactions and stalking her and tracking her down at her home and at bars, he got more charges than due to some type of evidence situation. His original charge was dropped, but he's now incarcerated, rightfully so, because of the extra bail jumping charges that they were able to get stuck on him. And I just wanted to make that point and, you know, just kind of say it's not always bad that more charges are getting on. Sometimes it really saves the public from a mistake, you know, by an officer or a court officer.
Yeah, Ben, thank you so much for sharing that story. Cecilia, what do you hear there about that different perspective, a look on bail jumping?
Well, so I definitely think it brings home the important point that although some rules of bond may seem unnecessary, others are important, like staying away from victims of serious crimes. At the same time, typically, if someone's engaging in problematic conduct, violating restraining orders, continuing, for example, stalking behavior, even after stalking charges have been brought, very often prosecutors are going to be able to bring new criminal charges about the substance of that behavior. Bail jumping becomes a problem in cases where the felony offense might turn on something as simple as having a drink on your birthday when your underlying crime has no connection whatsoever to alcohol consumption. In other words, it's the restraining of the liberty of people who haven't been convicted of a crime yet in ways that are questionable that then lead to very serious charges against them that I think has become a real point of concern, not bringing charges against someone who's engaging really in continued criminal behavior.
Ben, thanks for calling. Let's now bring in Cindy in Appleton. Hi, Cindy.
Well, I'd just like to say that I think bail is actually part of a class warfare because people of color and poor people very rarely can post bail or even offered bail. I mean, you've heard stories of people who sat in prison for 2 or 3 years before their case was even heard because they didn't have the affordability to post bail. So I think it's a class warfare issue, and I just think it needs to be a more fair and just system.
So Cindy brings up bail practices being inequitable. Cecilia?
Well, there's certainly no doubt that the poor are more likely to be incarcerated pretrial than are people who are more affluent. And we also know that being incarcerated pretrial has a lot of negative effects on how cases end. People who are incarcerated pretrial are more likely to plead guilty to crimes than people who are not. They're more likely to face longer sentences than people who are not. So it's a really important decision that the system has to make. And there are a lot of concerns about the equity of requiring even what may seem to a judge like a modest amount of cash bond may seem to an impoverished person like an impossible amount. I would point out our state actually does better than a lot of states on this front because we don't have a privatized bail bond industry. In general, our courts keep cash bond levels much lower than you might see in other states. And many of our judges are accustomed to letting people be released with a signature rather than with cash bond. But that doesn't mean that we don't have a problem. I do think it's important for us as folks in our state, as in other states across the country, talk about what's often called bail reform, trying to get more people pretrial out the door of the jail and back into the community. We do need to think about the effect of releasing people with lots of conditions, because given our state's laws, when we release people, but we place lots and lots of conditions on that release instead of asking them for money, then we are setting them up in many cases for the potential of future bail jumping charges.
We've seen Representative David Crowley of Milwaukee and State Senator LaTanya Johnson both proposing legislation for practices around bail jumping. What kind of change do these lawmakers want to see?
So fundamentally, they want to do two things. One would be to limit the ability to bring bail jumping charges for reasons other than non-appearance in court, which would be similar to, again, the practice of a lot of different states. And second would be to cap that penalty at the misdemeanor level, to say that bail jumping might be a crime in some cases, but that crime is going to be a misdemeanor, not a new felony.
We're talking with Cecilia Klingel, an associate professor at the UW Law School. We're looking at bail jumping, one of the most commonly charged crimes in our state. We heard from Elma in Madison, who couldn't stay with us, and Elma wanted to know if there's more bail jumping because people are not getting access to a speedy trial.
So I think that that's an interesting question. It seems to me that speedy trials, or the lack thereof, extend the amount of time that someone is going to be on bond.
And if they have an extended time that they have to meet these parameters set by the judge, that could perhaps cause them to slip up, maybe, you know, not appear in court.
Whether it causes it or not is an interesting question, but it certainly increases the amount of time they have to make a mistake. Right. And for many people, again, especially as we talk about cases in which there are lots and lots of conditions, ones that may be difficult for people to comply with. So, for example, if I am required to participate in drug testing or not consume alcohol, and I have a substance abuse problem, and I'm not getting treatment for that problem, it's going to be very difficult for me to comply with those bond conditions. And the longer I'm on bond, the more likely it's going to be that I'm going to be detected failing to meet that expectation.
You mentioned earlier there about bail jumping reform practices. What are you seeing out there in terms of how states are addressing their laws, changing them in terms of bail jumping?
So what we're mostly seeing is bail reform more than bail jumping reform.
Okay.
Because, again, in many states, bail jumping is much less of an issue than it is here in Wisconsin. If bail jumping is a crime, only attaches to people not showing up in court, you're just not going to be charging that crime very often. And most people seem to think that it's fair to bring bail jumping charges if, in fact, you are not appearing in your underlying case. Bail reform more broadly is about trying to increase the ability of people, particularly poor people, to be released before they're convicted. And so in many places, the rules are changing to make it more difficult for judges to impose high amounts of cash bail or even any cash bail in some cases, and also to limit the situations in which judges can keep someone detained pretrial with the allegation that it would be too dangerous to release that person.
Well, Cecilia, thank you so much for joining us.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Cecilia Klingel is an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, where she teaches courses in criminal law, constitutional criminal procedure, policing, sentencing, corrections. Just ahead, we speak with an associate professor of psychology at Northwestern about how white parents aware of racial bias are more likely to talk with their kids about race. We look at new research on child development, social cues, and emerging science on racial bias. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.